From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll chat with photographer John Gentry about his Portrait a Day project.
Then I'll get a preview of Meet the Artists exhibit at the library.
And plus for Valentine's Day, I'll talk with a couple who knows how to keep the magic in their show. And there's our arts calendar, a very brief one that we'll call What Will We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Photographer John Gentry has worked as a photojournalist, has taught photography and photojournalism, and he's even done a wedding or two. But his latest project, titled A Portrait a Day Project, 365 Indianapolis, may be his greatest challenge. Since last June, he's been taking a portrait of someone in Indianapolis every day and posting them to his website. Travis DiNicola, who himself was photographed on day four, talked to John about the project.
Oh, we are recording this a little bit before we air. We are actually, as I understand, on day 245 of your project, 365 Indianapolis. I want to start out by asking you, what prompted you to do this, this undertaking of a photograph of a portrait of someone in Indianapolis every day for a year?
Well, there were several things that went into this becoming an actual project. One was I was teaching photojournalism at IUPUI, and I was talking to my students about the photography during the Depression era, the FSA photographers, Dorothea Lange, Walker Evans, Gordon Parks, and others spread out across the nation to put a face on the Depression. Well, that was part of it. Another part, another element came at the Dr. Martin Luther King dinner, not this year, but a year ago. Reverend Bishop Tutu's daughter was telling us about a slogan that her father told her, and I do not remember the African translation, but the English translation is, "I am nothing without you." Mm-hmm. So that, along with what's going on now economically and socially, you know, we're in a big recession, we had the Gulf oil spill and all this other stuff, kind of made me wonder what the country looked like today.
Yeah.
Well, that was such a big undertaking that whole thing, "I am nothing without you," the Bishop Tutu's daughter slogan, kept coming back to me. And I thought that it would be kind of cool to introduce 365 of Indianapolis's neighbors to the city.
Well, so when you started this, you had full intention of saying, "I'm going to do this for a year. I'm going to, you know, take a photograph of a different person, maybe people I know, maybe strangers, but people in Indianapolis, once a day for a year." But at some level, because I know we've talked at different times throughout this process, and it's kind of gotten a little bit bigger, I think, than what you imagined.
It's gotten a lot bigger than what I imagined. And I have to say that it gets frustrating at times, just going out trying to find... I'm trying to maintain an ethnic balance as well as a gender balance. Mm-hmm. So it does get frustrating at times when you're out and you know that you're falling behind here, you're falling behind there, and you really want to catch up and you have an idea of what you need and you can't get it. And then you do end up with your portrait that day. The satisfaction comes every night when I look at the website and I see the mosaic of faces that represent the city, and I think there are four or five pages of those faces now, and there is a great deal of satisfaction in that.
What sort of self-imposed rules do you have? I mean, it has to be within that day. I mean, you can't do like two one day and skip the next to double up. I mean, that means I know you don't particularly like going out in the winter, but this means you're going out in the winter. You're probably limited in your travel outside of Indy. How do you sort of work around that?
Well, you just do. Thanksgiving morning's perfect example. I went to Cincinnati on Thanksgiving to visit my sister, and I knew they were having the run up in Broad Ripple. I think it's called the Turkey Trot or something like that. And so I knew that was going on. I knew that my mother and I needed to be on the road relatively early to enjoy the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to go out early Thanksgiving morning. I don't know if you remember it, but I do. It was pouring rain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
and,
right.
And I took my little dog with me, so he was all soaking wet. And we're walking around trying to find someone to photograph. And nobody wanted to have their picture taken that morning. So I did find a guy, and he agreed. Well, it turned out he wasn't from here. He was from, I think, Carmel or Fishers. So I do have to bend the rules from time to time.
So that's pretty close. I mean, it wasn't like he's from another
state or
anything.
Well, I've got people that, one guy is from Bedford, a lady's from McCordsville, and...
But there are pictures of people taken in Indianapolis.
Right, yeah, right. Okay. And they have business here. I photographed a lady a couple of weeks ago that turned out to be from Lafayette.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, man. Well, you know. And then she says, well, you know, when I was a little girl, my dad used to bring us down here all the time to go shopping and blah, 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 blah. Well, okay. You know, she really wanted to be in. And I can't say, well... Thank you, but no.
Yeah.
I'd already taken the pictures, and then the history came, and so she's in.
And you get a release from all these people, right?
I do.
And you know, it must be also just pretty daunting for you. I mean, I know, John. I mean, you've worked as a photojournalist. You've taught journalism, photojournalism. You've been doing this for a long time. But still, I mean, essentially every day you're waking up saying, "I got to find someone new today to take a picture of." And I'm correct. You don't plan like you don't. Know tomorrow, or you don't know who you're going to take a picture of tomorrow, because you don't say, like, oh, I'm going to do this friend or this person. I mean, you basically just sort of go out, put yourself out. I mean, even waiting for me right now to come into our studio for our interview, you made your picture of the day, the woman who's working receptionist here at WFYI. Right? Well,
I did, and I planned that. I said this morning, I am going to photograph the lady at the receptionist at WFYI. Since I did.
Did
since
you? Okay.
I did.
Okay.
Since I had to be there, well... she was receptive.
Yeah.
People aren't always receptive.
Well, she's a receptionist. But people are not always receptive. I mean, you go up to people and they're thinking, like, who is this guy? Why does he want to take my picture, right?
Right. And, you know, after I tell them what I'm doing, they're generally okay with it. Where I've run into problems is where I've photographed first. And, you know, I capture a really nice candid or something. And then the person, for whatever reason, doesn't want to have their picture used in the project.
Yeah.
And I've had several of those. Ran into a couple at the auto show. And I really, really wanted to photograph this lady sitting in a BMW convertible. And they were just, no.
Yeah.
And I didn't really... I got so flustered, I think, that I probably blew my presentation. and that kind of happens too, because you don't have a lot of time to engage people.
Yeah.
And I do have to go out and engage someone every single day, and I'm getting better at it.
What's sort of like a standard pitch that you give? Like, you know, if you see someone you want to take a
picture. Well, I have
a
nice card.
Yeah.
That has Indianapolis 365. I have a logo. Mm-hmm. Compliments of a whole bunch of people who.
Yeah.
I would like to name later. But I have a card, and I give them the card, and it kind of explains what I'm doing, that I'm trying to create a portrait, a 365-day portrait of the city of Indianapolis. And when they see that, if they take time to read it, they realize I'm not selling something.
Right.
Nor am I that creepy guy with the camera, which, you know, we don't want.
Right.
I just want to take a nice portrait and... Now, include you in the project.
Do you ever show them? Because I know sometimes you'll carry around your iPad, for example, and you'll be able to pull up the site on there and show them past portraits. Do people want to see that? Or?
Sometimes they do, and that makes it a much easier sell.
Yeah. Okay.
But you got to get to that point.
Yeah.
You have to engage them long enough to. Make them want to see it. But generally, after I explain to them what I'm trying to do, and, you know, it's not going to cost you anything,
mm-hmm.
they're okay with it.
So tell me about some interesting encounters you've had over the past. I mean, now I know you included, I think, in the first week, and it started, you know, what, end of May, beginning of June, is that right?
It started the 1st of June.
1st of June, okay, in 2010. And I know that week you had Mayor Ballard was one of the people who took a
right.
photograph of. I got in on your first week, which was very cool. I had no idea what I was getting into. But since then, I know you've had some really interesting encounters with some people.
I have, and there have been really far too many to mention.
Yeah.
Because I remember almost, if I look at the picture, mm-hmm. and this is the really bizarre thing about my project, if I look at the picture, I can remember the whole day. And that's 245 days of memories that I have. I know exactly
wow.
what I did, where I was, why I took the photo I took. And, you know, I can't say what makes one better than the other,
mm-hmm.
But I have had some real interesting. For instance, I went and shot a guy at Tabernacle a couple of Sundays ago.
Yep.
And it was just kind of nice meeting him and the group of guys that play there. I may even start playing basketball again as a result of it. You know, I've got a Naptown roller girl that
sure.
I met at Indy Vinyl, a bicycle, or Mr. Fox that owns the bicycle shop down in Fountain Square.
Yeah.
There are just a number of people that I've met and encountered during this that have really interesting stories, which I have an intern
mm-hmm.
Who will be contacting the people that I photographed to do a slight narrative with relevance
okay.
to Indianapolis. And
yeah.
what do you want people to know about you?
Huh. Well, I wondered about that, because I know that my understanding was that you weren't actually taking written notes about the people. And as you said, you would be able to sort of look at the photograph and remember
right.
the process. But I was wondering if there was going to be any other documentation beyond that.
Initially, okay. there wasn't.
Yeah.
But it's gotten the attention of a lot of different people.
Mm-hmm.
And the possibilities make it necessary to have narratives on the people. I've had so many people come to me and say, wow, that's an interesting picture. I'd like to know more about this person. And, you know, I'm not trying. Most of these people that I photograph are either working
mm-hmm.
or on their way somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have time for an interview. So now that I have an intern that is highly motivated and
mm-hmm.
really eager to tackle this, I just think it can only add to the overall project.
Very cool. That's a great idea. Now, right now, everything that you have is up on the website, and it's a great looking website, and I like it a lot because it's easy to sort of look, you know, sort of skim through all the photos and pick out different ones. Are there plans at this point, John, for, you know, a gallery show, a book, something else?
I've had so many ideas
yeah.
For what where this could go. A colleague of mine a week or so ago mentioned that I should have a show in conjunction with the Super Bowl being here in Indianapolis,
mm-hmm.
which would give us an opportunity to introduce 365 Indy
yeah.
folks to 180,000 people that come for the Super Bowl. So that I don't know what could happen with
mm-hmm.
that, but it's
That'd
one of
cool.
those things that's out there. People have said, well, you should do a coffee table book.
Mm-hmm.
I should do a coffee table book. Well, it could happen.
Uh-huh.
I can't see me doing a coffee table book, but I could see
right.
You know, this is totally self-funded, and so far it's been working.
Is there anyone at this point that you really would love to make sure you include in this? Or if not a specific person, maybe a type of person? Or
well, I don't have anyone from our professional sports teams.
Okay.
I've covered Indianapolis government pretty well. I would like to get the governor, since he does his work here in
mm-hmm.
the city, but I'm not trying to. I don't want too many of government people, or too many artists, or too many singers, or too
mm-hmm.
many lawyers. I have a lot of lawyers, and I don't know how that happened.
That?
But you know, you go up to people and you take their picture. And well, what do? I'm a lawyer. Well, okay. That's
so maybe there's something interesting about the way lawyers in Indianapolis look that draw them to you.
Well,
you to them, perhaps.
I think that most of the attorneys that I've photographed, uh-huh. with the exception of one, have been out and about.
Uh-huh.
And when you're out and about, you're easy to spot. Mm-hmm. You have an interesting look or persona, or there's something that draws you. I photographed one that was on a Sunday morning. He had, mm-hmm. a Colts jersey on.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Colts football Sunday. He had a jersey. I asked him if I could take his picture. He said, sure. He was an attorney. So,
and when you say out and about, it really is out and about. People walking down the sidewalk downtown, people up in Broad Ripple, people...
If I see someone interesting,
Fountain Square, yeah.
I will ask them if I can photograph them.
Yeah.
And if they don't, If they agree, it's like, good, thank you very much. Because, you know, as this is turning out, it's just as much, everybody that's in this project, you know, they own it just as much as I do.
Yeah.
I'm just the guy that mashes the button or takes the picture. I cannot do this without the so far 245 people that have agreed to allow me or to trust me to do a good job with their image. And hopefully that's what I want to do. I want to do a good job. I want to put a good face on the individual and on the city. I would like to thank some people.
Please.
Because, you know, Troy Brown is one of the people that's, he kind of pushed me into this. I went to his office one day and I said, Troy, I think I'm going to take a picture of someone every day. He says, I think that's a cool idea. Well, I didn't say anything else about it. And I was in his office one day and someone came and said, Troy said, did you hear what John's doing? He's going to do a portrait a day. Well, he kept that going. And so he's one. Steve Hodges built my website, and George Brown designed my logo. And so they're all kind of behind this whole thing.
Absolutely.
And in addition to the 245 folks, I got to thank them too.
Travis DiNicola with photographer John Gentry. Photographs from A Portrait a Day Project, 365 Indianapolis, can be found at aportraitadayproject.com. Again, aportraitadayproject.com. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
It's almost time again for the Meet the Artist Gala at Central Library. You can see Meet the Artist exhibition featuring the work of prominent Indianapolis African American artists at Central Library through March 26th, but there's a special reason to go on Saturday, February 19th. That's when you get to meet the artists. An evening-long gala with activities for all ages. Sharon Gamble invited Tony Radford, curator, and Dolores Drain, known as Lodi, into our studios to tell us more about the exhibit and the gala.
So, Tony, I want to ask you to remind us why you started this event. You looked around one day and said, we need this event, and why was that?
Well, actually, I was influenced by the late Joe Holliday's work. They had his work on display in 88, and I was just amazed at his work, his colors, his subject matter. And then I think I may have gotten a little attitude because I work at the library and didn't know all this great art was there. It was nothing on radio, TV, and the newspaper. It was kind of just there for the sake of having a couple of African-American artists for Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
But then I was excited, and I was just at that time stepping out, getting my feet wet, and I was going to openings and, you know, mm-hmm. producing what I was doing at the time. And so I went to a lady who was in charge of that exhibit, Barbara Alexander, which was a committee member of the African-American History Committee with the library. And I told her next year I was interested in doing the artwork. And she said, okay. She took it to the committee, and they said, well, okay, you know, you could show your stuff. But then I realized again that I was just getting my feet wet, and I didn't have enough stuff to show, I went back to her and said, well, let's do a group show, but let's kick it off with a nice reception with some food, a jazz band, and you know, get some publicity, radio, TV, mm-hmm. and acknowledge the African-American artists, because at the time and still, there's not a African-American gallery here in the state or a museum. So one was to give local artists exposure. We did the first show with 11 artists, a jazz band, some food in the opening, and about 120 people showed up, and I thought it was a big success. And I quit going to the meetings because I thought it was just a one-shot deal. And they called me up and said, well, you know, we want to do it again. So 23 years later, here we are.
Boy, there are a whole bunch of lessons in the story you just told, not the least of which is what's the worst that happens if you ask? The worst that could happen is somebody says no, and the best that could happen is somebody says, hey, let's try it and see what happens, and no pressure or anything, but now it's become an annual event.
23 years.
Yeah.
When they said yes, then I was in another dilemma because I didn't know a lot of artists, you know.
And, yeah. How did you find the artists back
in
the beginning?
Well, in the beginning, after they said yes, and I was like, okay, now where am I going to find all these artists? Actually, I was riding down college one day, and I looked to my left, and I saw some black dolls in a storefront, which at that time was Expressions Bookstore.
I remember that.
So I did a U-turn, turned around, and went in and started talking to the owner, Donna Stoke Lucas. And I asked her about the dolls, and I told her what I was doing. I was looking for African-American artists. Unfortunately, the lady was from out of town. But she gave me a couple of names, and I called those people up, and me and Barbara Alexander for the next month were riding around in my Volkswagen van with no heat and seeking out artists. You know, we went and talked to those couple of artists. They gave us a couple more names, so the following week we set up an appointment, went and talked to those artists, till we finally got 11 artists together to put a show together, and that's basically how we started out. And each year has just kind of been word of mouth. You know, I get out a lot, so I go to a lot of exhibits and you know, see a lot of talent. So it's just networking.
Networking, right? So, yeah. Lodi, I want to bring you into this conversation. First of all, I want you to explain your nickname.
Lodi?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a big one. We don't know where it came from. My name is Dolores. My mother and some of my sisters call me Lori. My father used to call me Lolo. We don't know where Lodi come from. So it's a mystery. It's just me.
But it's nice. It's distinctive and it's unique. Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you first... You've lived here your whole life.
Yes.
Do you remember your first impression of the Meet the Artist exhibition? Do you remember when you first it hit you
class.
And you said...
First class. Hadn't really... Well, I had done, Black Expo, the art mm-hmm. exhibit was there, but for this to actually be for us, it was just first class, fun, the quality of the art, everyone there was like the pride that was there for the whole community, not just for the African-American community, but the whole community.
What do you think about the Central space now that you've been back in Central for a couple of years?
I love it. It's great. I mean, it's a beautiful building, spacious. I love the way we set the show up. As soon as you step through the front door at St. Clair, we got the St. Clair Street Gallery, is which I call it. Then you walk into the old part, the Cray Building. We have art there. Then you walk into the atrium. We have art in the atrium. And then we take it up four floors. So it's, you know, all through the building. And we've just gotten so many compliments on the work and on the show, and just to enhance that beautiful building with the art is great.
Yeah. Lodi, how did you get started in art, and what were you attracted to first? Was it painting? Was it metalwork? What got you in?
My eldest brother, the late Marcellus Michael Williams, he was in the Marines. I was about 5 years old. He came home on leave one day with the beginner's artist kit. And it was on from there ever since. So he recognized me, and it's kind of really all through my family, my mom, my dad. We're a large family, and from the visual arts, performing arts, it just runs through the blood, as they say.
Can't escape it. You work a lot with kids.
Yes.
And what do you find is there a what age kids do you mostly teach?
All ages. Yeah. I say from the cradle to the grave,
yeah,
literally.
Yeah, big kids too, grown-ups, mm-hmm, so-called grown-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Is there kind of an optimal age to get kids exposed to trying visual art?
Optimal age.
Like, is there
it's from the beginning. We all got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, what I sometimes worry about is sometimes with all the arts, kids who are old enough to really start paying attention and looking at museums or looking at galleries or coming and looking at your exhibit, sometimes they reach an age where they think, I can't do this. I'm not flexible enough. I couldn't learn this. But that's not really true.
From my experience, once you just kind of let the children understand that art is not specific to just one anything, that it's in them, they just need it brought out. All of us, just what's in you need to be brought out. You don't have to live up to someone else's standards or expectations. Just the education and the freedom to be yourself and do your art. And I mean, it's from all ages, because I hear that, mm-hmm, from the youngest to the eldest. Once you free them to be themselves from all these false expectations, kind of get them out of the box,
mm-hmm,
man, they flourish. We flourish. We're creative beings. It's in us.
Absolutely. Tony, how did art grab you?
Well, I back in the day, you know, we didn't have computers or all the technology that, mm-hmm, the kids have today, so we had to be creative. We had to go out and create something to do. So in my area, you know, it was tree houses, go-karts, making kites, all kind of crafts. So I was kind of considered myself like the little rascals. We were always building, making something, you know, coming up with a plan, you know, and I was always the general. You know, I'd always had the plan laid out for me, my brother, and my cousin, and a couple of friends in the neighborhood. So I was always the thinker the night before. I'd lay the plan out. Say, okay, we're going to build a tree house. Well, we built a tree house. My brother, later on, they formed a band. We built a platform in my mother's yard for the band to play. And I, too, teach and work with kids and have, yeah, been for the last 20 years through Young Audiences and Indianapolis, mm-hmm, Art Center's Outreach Program. And I was working with a group of kids a few years ago, and I said, let's build a go-kart. These kids didn't have an idea what a go-kart was because they're so into computer and,
sure,
technology. And, you know, it just kind of shocked me, and I was like, okay, we're going to build a go-kart, and we're going to take it to the Soapbox Derby Hill, and that's what we did. And those kids had a wonderful time. And every year we started doing an open house where these kids would create art, sell it, and we would take them on an educational field trip every September. And we did that for about 10 years. And I've exposed kids to, you know, not only visual art, but taking them out of town to the Freedom Center in Cincinnati, to Chicago. They've eaten at Michael Jordan's restaurant. We've been to aquariums and museums and artifact shops. And I also tried to instill them the importance of career-oriented goals early. So I had a lot of students that went on to do major competitions that are still in art and doing real good.
What a success story. You know, the your background sounds like it was perfect to make you a curator in later life, you know, as the general, as the guy who's going, okay, here's all the materials we need, here's how they have to go together. It's kind of an engineering process.
Yeah, it is.
You know, we were talking before we turned the microphones on about the prominence of digital art, and I know you're both old enough to have seen a change in kids. I don't think it's necessarily that children don't want to experience a three-dimensional world or build a go-kart. Somewhere along the line, they've just had less exposure to the physical world. Have you felt that change?
Yeah, and that's true. Like I say, you know, they grew up more in technology.
Yeah.
So you know, it's to somebody like me, or Lodi comes along and you know, brings them out of that and show them that, you know, it's other things that you can do with artistically or creatively, you know. But if my thing with younger generation today is, you know, they grew up in, you know, informational age where it's computers and technology and yeah. TV and...
Life is tactile. We're really here. So once they have something in their environment to where they can look at all that technology and all that virtual existence, then they can actually put their hands on and make their own. That's what's paramount of what about what Tony has done, because with Meet the Artist, there's the children's section, there's authors, poetry, everything. And we've got to... It's hard, you know, the older you get, I guess, each generation can't just let go and just exist separately from the younger generation. You have to meld that together so that we don't lose our history, but we also don't negate the children's future, and they have a way to bridge their real life experiences, you know, and go on with that and have a real part in there, not just watch it.
Mm-hmm. There'll be a great opportunity at the gala event to mix those generations and have those kind of conversations, right? There's music, there's poetry,
yeah.
There's for somebody who's never had the chance, who's maybe seen the exhibit because it's up for several weeks, but hasn't been to the gala, what's that like?
Well, the gala is just phenomenal. And it's for everybody, you know, for every age limit. I mean, we've seen from infants to, I think the oldest person was a 96-year-old lady that attended the gala. So
that's
it's something
great.
For everybody. It's a family event, you know. It's a family cultural party, as we call it, you know, for everybody. So we encourage everybody to come out, the kids, the young adults, the seniors. And, I mean, it's just a fun night with just culture, just art. There'll be dance. There'll be, I mean, we're even bringing in a magician from Chicago.
Cool.
we bought here last year, and he was so good, you know, that everybody's like, where'd you get him from? And, you know, and the thing about him, he also taught the history of African-American magicians. So you wasn't just getting a magic show. You were getting history. He was telling us about these magicians that I had never heard about and their rich history. So it's also a learning thing, too. Freetown Village is going to be there. They're going to do storytelling and games. And so it's just a learning experience, and it's something for everybody. So we want everybody to come out February the 19th and enjoy an evening of culture and fun and family and networking, and this, I mean, you can do everything. Artist network, you know, we bought a fashion show in a few years ago, which was become a big part of the show, and people say, well, why a fashion show at an art? Well, you have to look at fashion is art. Fashion
Absolutely.
Is you know, somebody had to sit down and sketch it out, somebody had to put it together, and it's a part of our culture, you know. Since day one, kings and queens over in Africa, you know, till today. I mean, if you look in the 20s and 30s, fashion was a big part.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then, again, we don't have a lot of outlets for those people, either the local designers. So when we started, like I said, it started with just a small exhibit and a jazz band. And now, you know, we've got... You know, I saw that, you know, it was a lot of other people liking, you know, we've had theater, dance, just everything. So if you come out, it's a very enjoyable evening for everybody.
Sharon Gamble with curator Tony Radford and artist educator Dolores Drain, known as Lodi. You can see their work at Meet the Artists at Central Library through March 26th. And you're invited to mix and mingle with the artists and enjoy an evening of cultural entertainment during the Meet the Artists Gala reception on Saturday, February 19th from 5:45 to 10 p.m. at the Central Library. There will be poetry, a fashion show, music, kids' activities, and much, much more. Hey, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
Well, for our calendar this week that we usually call
What'll We Do?
We're going to make it pretty quick this week because basically we just want to tell everyone to go out and get a Valentine's for your sweetie, right?
Absolutely. Buy some locally grown food.
Or a painting.
Or take your sweetie to a concert.
There you go. That's what you should do. And we'll be back next week with more ideas on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Husband and wife Christian Painter and Catalina Absalon have no trouble in putting a little magic into their marriage for Valentine's Day. In fact, magic is their profession. Though their home is Indianapolis, for years they've been traveling the world performing their act, Married to Magic, on cruise ships, in nightclubs, at college campuses, and for corporate parties. This year they're spending more time at home in Indy and bringing their performances to local audiences. Travis DiNicola spoke with Christian and Catalina to find out more.
Christian, Catalina, welcome to Art of Matter. Great to have you guys both here.
Hey, thanks, Travis, for having us.
Good to be here.
Well, and especially I was thinking, you know, this weekend before Valentine's Day was a great time to have a couple who know how to keep the magic in their show, right? Okay, we'll get past the married stuff.
But it's good. But you know what? It's a valid point, because one of the things that people talk about in our show is the fact that we're a married couple doing it, and that we, on stage, we love each other. We show that. And that was important to us.
It's a big part of your act. I mean, I've seen your show many times, and I love it. I mean, the connection that you guys have and share on stage is what makes it so fun.
And, you know, we ask people after the show, what was your favorite part of the show? Mm-hmm. And we are surprised when people say, oh, we just love how positive you guys are.
Yeah.
So it's really great. We love that.
Well, that's fantastic. So tell me how this all sort of started. I mean, which came first, the marriage or the magic?
Go ahead, baby.
That is an interesting question. Actually, Christian was into the magic before we met. Okay. So he was actually doing it since he was a teenager. And then the marriage part came along, and believe it or not, I actually wasn't part of the show when we got married.
Really?
Yep. It was Christian, and he was working with another partner.
Okay. I was working with a guy off in Germany right now. And we did, in fact, it was the first time that I worked together with a partner. It was with him. And for a couple of years, we were doing shows in Europe. And I really liked working with another partner. That was a lot of fun. And then when we moved back to the United States, we moved back to Arizona,
mm-hmm.
and obviously he stayed in Germany. But I told my wife, I said, I really like working with a partner. It's been very exciting, and it was really fun. And I said, well, I think you should do it. and so I kind of recruited her. And
you did. You pulled me in, baby.
I did.
That's so cool. What were you doing before that? I mean, were you in performance at all? Or?
Believe it or not, I was not in performance.
Yeah.
I was behind the scenes, so I knew the show.
Okay.
And I knew, you know, the production side and making sure kind of all the back behind the scenes stuff that happened to make sure everything got taken care of. But mm-hmm. I was just not, you know, in front on the stage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so now you know the tricks. I mean, he's shared them with you.
Oh, yes.
You guys actually do a couple different shows, Mind Tripping, Married to Magic. You do a lot of stuff. I know everything from cruise ships and colleges and corporate stuff. Which show sort of started it? Was it or was the first one that you started working on?
Well, actually, the first show, I believe it or not, I started in comedy clubs, just doing comedy.
No, really? Yeah.
And then to try to set myself apart, I would throw in some magic, and I was stunned at how well-received it was. I think you kind of forget sometimes. When you're young, you're like, oh, magic is cool. And mm-hmm. then as you go into your 20s on up, you start thinking, oh, mm-hmm. maybe that wasn't as cool as I thought. And then we did it, and we're like, holy cow, it's amazing. And so then I became more and more doing more and more of the magic and the mind-reading stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So when Kat came along, I was still doing the other act with the one guy. She took his place, so to speak, but I realized we've got to change the dynamics because she's my wife, and that should be a part of the show. And believe it or not, that was probably some of the hardest writing, to write a show that is funny.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's fun and funny. There's a lot of humor. Interesting and also positive about marriage. Because if you look at some of the old show or the shows today on television,
we thought, okay, let's look at some of the sitcoms that are on TV that portray couples. They're just not positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're kind of mean to each other, and they bicker and they put each
other
down.
It's almost the expectation.
It is.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. And so we said, well, we don't want to do that.
because there's too much of that out there. So we wanted to change it and be positive, and I think people crave that now. Mm-hmm. That's what they want
to
see.
Christian, I want to go back to something you said, because when you talk about writing the show, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people just assume a magic show is just a whole bunch of tricks put together without even recognizing that there actually is a script that is written, that you do rehearse not just the tricks themselves, but the interaction, but the storytelling, but the jokes. Tell me a bit about that process, because I mean, maybe a great magic show, you know, you don't think it was written at all, but...
Well, no, you're right. You're right. I think you do, a lot of people think of magic as the tricks, mm-hmm. but a good magic show, a magic show that you think of when you see in Vegas or television or something that's really good, there's scripting, and you have to think, what is this trick about? If I'm going to do some sort of illusion, whether it's like we do a lot of mental illusions, mm-hmm. or psychological illusions, but or a physical illusion, like even a big magic box on stage, you have to think, what does this mean to the audience? What is the meaning, and what does that relate to them? Because if I just say, oh, it's a box, and you put your arm in it and put a sword through your arm, really?
Yeah.
Do I care? I mean, it might be interesting to watch, but you have to now...
Assuming that you can get the sword out of your arm.
Assuming that you don't die. But no, you want to make you want it to have meaning for people beyond just, hey, that's a cool thing to watch. Mm-hmm. And also, some of the magic requires a setup. And so you don't want people to be bored, like, okay, so he's doing this, and now he's doing this, and soon there'll be a tricky part. So there's a lot of writing. And when you sit down, I think the biggest thing we look at is what? What does this mean to the audience? Mm-hmm. Why are they going to care about watching this? And I think that's probably true for any art.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you care about this song or this sculpture or this painting? There's got to be some sort of emotion in it, and that's what we look for. What's the emotional
hook? Or some sort of connection, because you can tell people just to pick a card, but does that really mean anything? No, why are they picking a card? What is really the emotion behind, what are they going to do with this card? You have to make it fun and interesting and relevant to them. And really, a lot of our time is figuring out, well, how do we take this trick and make it into a theater piece?
Mm-hmm.
And that does take a lot of work and creativity and coming up with ideas and how to make that work.
Because if you actually, I would imagine, you know, take the amount of time that you spend doing the trick, mm-hmm. it's a very small percentage of the whole show, I would think.
Yes. Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, you do you have characters that you portray? I mean, are they exaggerations of yourself, or do you think of yourself as being in character when you're on stage as in a theater piece?
Absolutely. When you write the show, the first thing we always have to ask ourselves is, what is the character's motivation? Mm-hmm. Why am I doing what I'm doing, and would it fit? Because sometimes we'll look at it, let's say there's some really cool trick that we'd like to put in the show.
Yeah.
Well, but does it fit? Would I do it? Would Catalina do it? Would it be something that's going to fit with what the characters we've created on the stage do? And if not, sometimes we're kind of sad and go, oh, that would have been really neat, but we can't. But it would not be congruent to the show. It'd be one of those ones where, well, that was neat, but I don't understand why they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't want that. You want that continuity of the show, so when you're done, people feel like, wow, what a ride, and everything made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so the characters that we think, and, of course, the characters we really hit on is that we're married, and that we're a little odd. I mean, we have to be, because we're doing odd things. Yeah. We're doing things. We're taking them on a mind trip. Mm-hmm. And so we have to just know what you know what it is knowing what your powers are, too. You can't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a superhero in a way. Superheroes can't do everything. They have a set of powers.
Right, you can't be invisible and fly. It's one or the other.
That's right.
That's right.
Exactly.
Yep.
You can't do it all. Or, mm-hmm. or I think that also makes the audience start to go, well, this kind of, I don't know where to grab. I mean, if you even think in television today, anybody who's a superhero always has also something they're trying to overcome. Superman
mm-hmm.
had trouble trying to get a date with Lois Lane. I mean, he had this trouble of, oh, how do I ever get a date with her? Spider-Man is the same way. He's kind of goofy or mm-hmm. a little awkward mm-hmm. Socially without his uniform. House on television.
Sure.
I mean, he has social issues, even though he's brilliant. Monk. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these shows, they have a power, but they also have something they're trying to overcome. And, mm-hmm. and I think
so there really is an arc to the story that you're telling in the shows that you do.
Absolutely. You can't just be a Superman.
Yeah.
Or that gets boring too. Look what I can do, and you can't.
Now let me ask you about your superpowers. with most of the shows that I've seen the two of you do, there's certainly more of an emphasis on the mentalism part, that type of magic, as opposed to stage illusions or sleight of hand. Though, I mean, there is some other stuff in there, but for listeners who are maybe not as familiar with what I'm speaking of right now, tell me a bit about the difference and why you chose to go sort of more the mentalist route on this.
Well, we'll be honest with you. When you're doing stage illusions, mm-hmm. you have to have that beautiful physical ability to do the like
the posing,
the dancing, and that's just not us. He came from a comedy background, mm-hmm. so definitely those beautiful poses are.
Christian
not
is
us.
Not a dancer.
No, I'm not. You don't want to see that. And part of that, even as a performer, you have to figure out who you are. You have to figure out what your strengths are. And even though I look at certain performers and I go, oh, I'd love to be able to perform like that, I can't. Mm-hmm. And so you have to let that go and just enjoy it, but realize this is my strength. And I think the two strengths we enjoyed were, one is the comedy. We have the fun between us, the love between us, of course. Mm-hmm. We like to emphasize that. But then we enjoyed taking the people on the mental trip.
Yeah.
And I think partly because you don't see a lot of that. And
so what does that mean? What is that mental trip?
Well, you know, why don't you tell them one of your favorite shows a little bit farther back?
The inspiration. The inspiration for the show, mind-tripping show, came from Candid Camera.
Mm-hmm.
And in Candid Camera, back in the 60s, if you can think back in the 50s and 60s, with Alan Funt, that's way back there. What was great about that show is it took people, normal people, and put them in a very bizarre situation, one that did not make sense. And then you got to watch their reactions. And one of my favorites was they took the engine out of a car.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the car worked, except there was no engine. They put a female driver in it, and they shoved it down a hill. And so it coasted through town, and she pulled into a gas station right up to the pump. Now, this was in the time when they had gas station attendants. So she pulled up, and she said, hey, fill it up and check the oil, please. Well, of course, they had the secret cameras in vans and that by the... So this guy opens up the hood. He looks in. There's no engine.
Uh-huh.
Now, from him, so you're already laughing because you know if you're this guy, this suddenly the world does not make sense.
Uh-huh.
She drove in. There's no engine. And so in that episode, he actually even asked her, and he knows it's not, but he's grasping, is the engine in the back? And she's like, no, silly. And so now he's got to go back and look at his engine again. And then he sticks his hand in the engine compartment and moves his hand like he's maybe it's invisible. I don't know. I'm grasping for anything.
Right. So you end up questioning everything that you know.
Everything. Yeah. And so we wanted to create a show where we put the audience in that position of just for a moment, I want you to go, how is this possible? What's happening?
Mm-hmm. Is it really magic? Is
right.
There, right.
I want to push you right to the edge where you're really questioning just what
just happened.
Do
what
they
did
have
I
supernatural
see?
Powers? What's
exactly?
You know,
let's push it. You know, really take you somewhere because the great thing about watching, let's say, an Indiana Jones movie is as you watch that, a part of you lets go and you go on this journey with them and you believe that this is all real.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when the show's over, you're able to go, what a great show. And then you're back in your mind, you go, I wonder if there's any archaeologists like that. Maybe that would be cool. And we want the same thing. When you leave the show, we want you to go, what a neat show. I wonder if any of that's really possible.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I know, people certainly leave thinking when they see your show is, can he really read her mind? You know, can a husband read a wife's mind? And that's, you know, something that, well, that's a whole other question, I suppose. But from a magical standpoint, you know, it does seem as though that the two of you can read each other's minds.
Well, that portion of the show is very difficult. I will tell you, it's taken us at least a decade to master. And there's probably only a handful of people in the world that can do that act.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really is. It's just so taxing and difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But the payoff is, when you see the audience have such a great time and are stunned, that makes it all worth it.
And we just want people to come out and have a good time and enjoy the show. You know, we don't want people to go away thinking, wow, I really believe in mind reading, or I really believe.
Yeah.
You know, we just want them to come out, have some fun with us, and get them thinking. They'll be talking after the show. Oh, did you see? Do you remember this? How did that happen? I don't know how this works. You know, just conversation starters. And
that's half the fun. I mean,
exactly.
I've seen a magic show. So one place that people can see you, it's really cool. I'm glad you guys, I know you've been living in Indianapolis for a long time, but you've been traveling quite a lot. And during this next year, you're going to be spending a little bit more time at home. Many people, you know, perhaps seen you at Fringe or through some other places, but you've got a regular gig more or less down at the Hilton. Tell me briefly about that.
Oh, we're very excited. We are at the downtown Hilton, which is where McCormick & Schmick's is also in, because there's a couple of Hiltons down there, so we want people to get confused. We're on Saturday and Friday nights at 8 p.m. is the show. And the Hilton has been fantastic. They're partnering with us, and so we have some special things we're working with them on. Like, the Hilton has a restaurant in there, and if you come to the show, buy tickets, you get a buy one entree, get one free with the restaurant.
And this is the grill, not the McCormick & Schmick's.
Exactly,
right.
That's the grill. Yep. Mm-hmm. And then also parking. If you come to the show, parking in the Hilton garage is free, or if you want to do valet, it's only $5.
Cool. Now, do you need reservations ahead of time for these shows, or buy tickets ahead of time? Or
you can buy tickets ahead of time on the website, mindtrippingshow.com, or you can just show up and buy tickets. We have a mind-tripping show kind of central in the lobby of the Hilton, so you'll see us there when you walk into the lobby. And come talk to us. You can buy tickets there as well.
Great. Now, I know that a couple times you guys do have to be out of town or do other things on weekends and stuff, so it's always better to check the website to make sure which you know, weekend you're going to be down at the
Hilton. Website. Yes, check the website. You'll see. Now, we're mostly going to be at the Hilton this year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, like you said, a few weekends. So always check. And we also say if you can, if you really think you want to come, I would buy tickets because we do get sold out quite often. So.
Okay.
Because
just be
it's
on the
an
safe
intimate
side.
Show. Yeah, we only have about 40 people per show.
Oh, nice.
Because we want to keep it intimate and fun.
And there is audience participation.
There
I mean, is there a magic show without? I mean, I think maybe there are somewhere.
There might be some. We do a lot of it, though. You're right.
Be ready for that.
You have to be ready. Yeah. And have fun. I mean, it's all about fun.
Travis DiNicola with Christian and Catalina of Married to Magic. You can see them perform locally at the downtown Hilton on Illinois Street. For more information, visit their website at marriedtomagic.com. That's marriedtomagic.com. Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4, when I'll chat with Ron Spencer of Theater on the Square.
I'll talk with a local author about his book on the New York Mets' historic first year.
I'm ready for spring training. And I'll chat with composer Aaron J. Kernis. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What do we do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.